Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to Icons, a podcast brought to you by These Football Times, where we celebrate our new magazine of the same name. We have got 12 of these episodes, and we're going to dive deep into this life and legacy of one of football's greatest figures. I'm very pleased to be joined by one of the TFT team, who's got a fantastic player to talk about today. Welcome to the pod, Aidan.
Good evening, Rob. Thank you. I thought when you were talking about one of football's greatest players, you were leading into me with that, but hey, who else?
Maybe we can do an Icons Aidan Williams series sometime soon. We'll go through your highlights of your football career, which I'm sure there are many.
It won't take long.
Well, this one, to be fair, could take quite a long time if we were to go through all of the highlights and the achievements of this player. Who is your icon for this episode?
We are going to talk about the galloping major himself, Ferenc Puskás.
Brilliant. Great player. Don't know loads about this era. I've kind of got a bit of an understanding of what it was like just as a wider time for football history. So I'm really looking forward to this one. So before we sort of dig into him as a player, what was, if we contextualise sort of this era that Puskás was a player, what was the landscape like? How were things changing? Where was football at this point?
Well, football was very rigid and regimented. It's certainly in the British world anyway. We were wedded to our WM formation and very tactically inflexible. Whereas what Puskás and his crew in Hungary came up with was something that was the polar opposite of that and totally flexible. And that's why it caused such a stir. I guess by modern standards, it wouldn't be seen in quite the same way. But at the time, and that's what you're getting at there, is the contextualized where we are at this point in time. Everything was rigid and set formations. You had your position. You had your opposite number to mark. You followed them around. They followed you around. And that was it. Everybody was safe and knew what they were doing. But innovators see things a little differently, don't they? And they move things along. And that's what happened. I mean, he was part of a hugely significant international team, but the key player in that team. And I think, you know, they pushed football forwards massively with what they did in the 1950s, and his career obviously went on beyond that as well into a sort of second career, if you like, when he was part of Real Madrid and what went on there in the early European Cups. But you know, he was pivotal, I would say, to everything that the innovative Hungary team came up with in the 50s. And you know, I'd looked into this a lot for one of my books when I was going on about teams that failed to win the World Cup. And this, to me, was the most painful of those failures because they won so much either side of that one game. And yet,
it's incredible how things can change in time, isn't it? Imagine they had have won that World Cup. I wonder what the football landscape would have actually been like if a team from, you know, a nation like Hungary had actually lifted the trophy and what legacy that might have had for them as a nation. How did Puskás kind of fit into that model of this, you sort of regimented regime? Because obviously Hungary as a country was, you know, regimented and certain things going on politically, but where did he fit within that from a football sense?
Yeah, so, well, it was a very restricted country, but also it was a communist country, and therefore the sort of ideas of the collective were foremost in people's minds politically anyway. And then to then develop a football side that it was building on ideas that had gone before, you know, the whole Danubian school through the 30s and so on with Austria, Hungary and Czechoslovakia, developing a slightly more intricate style of play. So this wasn't fully brand new at this point. You know, the Austrians in the 30s had slightly more adaptable style and so on, but this built on that and took it on another notch. So he himself fitted in, well, technically, ostensibly as an inside left with his magical left foot that he had. I mean, he only had a left foot. That's one thing to note. His right foot was for nothing more than standing on. Incredible first touch on the ball, quick, precise passing, crossing, and incredibly powerful shooting. He can maneuver and change positions so quickly. He could switch, which is the key thing, switch roles with the centre forward in the Hungarian and his club side, Honved, very easily. Now, the centre forward at this point in this formation was a withdrawn centre forward, and this is what caused so many problems for people. It was a false nine long before we'd ever considered the idea of a false nine. And, you know, this caused absolute havoc to those who were stuck in their more regimented ways. And England, well, we might come onto those in terms of significant games and so on, but England struggled with that, certainly. But Puskás, I think he gained from the fact that Hungary at this time, being the communist regime, the clubs were then taken over by government and state authorities. So the national coach at the time ended up taking what was ostensibly a small club, Kispest, on the outskirts of Budapest, where Puskás just happened to play, and turning it into the army club. And it became Honved, which has a sort of militaristic defending the nation type of a meaning. It was the same club, though. And they could simply bring in the best players from around the country by conscripting them into the army. And Puskás himself ultimately was in the army as well, hence his nickname of the Galloping Major. But this was a way they could get a lot of the best players, not all, because there were still several of the key players who played at MTK, the other main club at that time. But many of the national team played together, and a few extras came in to just push it up a notch. And by this way, they could develop the style in this collective, cohesive way. They could get used to playing together. Whereas if you think at the time of the England team, it was picked by selection committee. And essentially it was just, right, we'll pick this person to play number nine, this person to play number eight, and so on. It wasn't thought through in terms of how people played with each other. It was just picking the best for each position and then just hoping that it all fitted together. That was the way of things in those who were maybe stuck a little behind the times at that point, whereas in Hungary and a few others, but it was utterly different, and Hungary were by far the best of it. And Puskás himself was the star of the team, you know, one among several. If you think of the likes of Sándor Coxis, who scored a huge amount of goals, particularly in the 54 World Cup, Josip Bosic, Nando Hidiguti, there's a lot of names who ordinarily would probably struggle to recall and pronounce if we hadn't known them so well from their great achievements, even though it was, 70 years ago now. But it was an incredible time for Hungarian football with Puskás as the pinnacle.
Was that year around the World Cup probably Puskás's peak of his powers? Obviously, he goes on to be incredibly successful at Real Madrid as well. If you were kind of looking at a period of time in his career where he was, you know, at the top of his game, what's the sort of period that you'd kind of look at?
Yeah, I think he's a player who probably has two peaks. And I think that it's almost as if career is totally split in two, and it indeed had a two-year ban in the middle of that. So it's almost as if it's two separate careers. So yes, in this first part of his career, the Hungarian part, the spell, I guess, from 52 to 54 would be the prime, and probably if you had to pin it down even closer, that 53-54 season where they beat England twice, the famous 6-3 match of the century at Wembley, where they just tore England apart. It was a humiliation, basically, for England, wasn't it? You know, their adaptable formation, a withdrawn striker, the slick play. Puskás himself scored following a lovely drag back, causing England captain Billy Wright to look a complete fool, sliding in to try and block him, and only for Puskás to drag the ball back and bypass him completely before shooting home. As famously described by the journalist Graham Greene in the next day's newspaper, Billy Wright was like a fire engine racing to the wrong fire. He was utterly fooled. And England then thought, well, okay, that happened, and maybe we've seen there's a new way, but we'll take them on again in Budapest in April 54, and I'm sure we'll right the wrongs there. But hey, England lost 7-1 on that return, so yeah, it didn't quite go, and England's eyes were finally opened. But like I say, it's the 2 years probably from the Olympic Games of 1952, which was their first international breakthrough, and Hungary won the gold medal there. They did win through on that occasion. A lot of political pressure there as well, because they were facing Yugoslavia, I think, in the final, and the Soviet overlords were very keen to make sure that the correct type of communism won through, rather than the slightly more open Yugoslav version. But that worked out, but the World Cup maybe didn't so much. And this is where the agonizing element of this part of Korea comes. But Puskás got injured in the group stage in a huge victory over West Germany. Hungary managed to get through to the final anyway, but then brought him back into the team for the final. And was that a mistake? Was it not? This is the endless question. But he did score in the final very early on as Hungary went in 2-0 lead. He also scored right at the end, which would have been an equaliser to make it 3-3. And he maintained to his dying day that the goal should have stood if it wasn't for a pesky Welsh linesman with a dubious flag. But what can we say about that? There was no VAR. Puskás's Hungary were undefeated for 4 years prior to that World Cup final. And they were unbeaten for 2 years after that World Cup final. So in that six-year span, they lost once. That once happened to be the World Cup final. And you're right, the different way football history could have gone, because this was West Germany's breakthrough. This was their emergence as a football nation, or as a nation, really, obviously in the aftermath of what had happened not long before. And how different things could have been if Hungary had won, and maybe Germany wouldn't have become this all-conquering power quite as soon as they would. I'm sure with their infinite resource, they would have done anyway, but maybe not quite so soon. And to have a World Cup victor from a smaller nation, an Eastern European nation, would have been quite something. And they deserve to, but it didn't happen. But equally then, yes, there's the other peak of his career. And I guess ultimately the culmination of that, Real Madrid, and I mean, Puskás scored goals at will. His strike rate, if you look at it, is almost one a game across his entire career. I think for Hungary, he was just one shy of one per game. And for Real Madrid, it's something along those lines as well. The 1960 European Cup final, I guess, is the defining performance of that time. For Real Madrid, he was scoring plenty in the league, and incredible partnership with Alfredo Di Stefano, who was the non-withdrawn centre-forward of Real's team, but it didn't seem to hinder Puskás at all. Obviously slightly adapted his style, and he was significantly overweight by this point as well, but didn't seem to stop him because he still had the skills. So that 1960 European Cup final against Eintracht Frankfurt at Hampden Park, of course. So again, from a British perspective, this was very much key in people's minds and memories. I recall as a child seeing this replayed on the TV. He scored four that day in a 7-3 win. He and Di Stefano absolutely unstoppable on that day. It was football from a whole different stratosphere at that point. And he was, again, key to it all, having reinvented himself almost in his second career. But, I mean, that just shows that the level of ability and quality and skill that he had, that despite age as well as fitness, he only joined Real Madrid age 31 and he played eight seasons there. So to have kept going at that incredible rate, despite age and not being the most lithe and athletic, says an awful lot about how skilled he was.
I think that game was recently shared on social media, I think in the last year or something like that. I think either someone had put the full game on of that European Cup final. And it genuinely looks like they're playing football from a different age. And I don't mean because it was 60 years ago. I mean, actually, for football 60 years ago, it looks like they were playing a completely different age. And obviously, Puskás was part of that Honved team that played Wolverhampton Wanderers as well in the mid-50s, just before that sort of advent of the European Cup, which then, you know, Real Madrid would win and then win when Puskás was there as well. In terms of the role that he played on the pitch, obviously he was an incredible goal scorer. And I just looked up his goal scoring record, actually, and it is frightening. And it's 624 goals in 629 career games, which is quite phenomenal. And then obviously the 86 in 90 for Hungary and Spain, and I think Madrid he played for. I'm not sure whether actually. I mean, I'm sure sort of the modern footballers would count those goals as their professional goals, but we all know it might have been using Romario's counting system for, you know, what he scores in five-a-side or on a Sunday league pitch. But how did...
Well, he's officially the seventh highest goal scorer of all time. Now, exactly which of those count and which don't, I don't know. But there you go. That says something about that.
And it's quite incredible, really. How did he sort of fulfil that position that he was in, that inside left position? Did he sort of redefine the role? Did he change the role? Obviously, you said before about he played with sort of a false nine, if you like, a deeper forward with Hungary and Honved, and then obviously with Di Stefano, who was not that type of player at all. Did he kind of fit within that, or was it almost just a, this is where I'm going to play, this is what I'm going to do, and we're going to build a team around me?
There was probably an element of that at times, and I think certainly when it came to the 1954 World Cup final, he was put back in and the others had to adapt around possibly his lack of mobility on that day. But really, overall, I think he was part of the collective. He was part of the team, just a phenomenally gifted part of it. And yeah, he was key to this team, but had to fit into how it was structured and how it played. You know, like we say, inside left, but there was a lot of interchanging positions, particularly between Puskas and Hidiguti, who was the usually the centre forward. Equally, the other inside forward, Coxis, who was the right-sided inside forward, would do likewise. So there was a lot of this interchanging going on, dropping deeper, pushing forwards. What would be to modernise, fairly basic and standard, but it was so revolutionary at the time. And I think when you talk about redefining a position and changing the game, this team did it hugely, and therefore Puskas in his role in that did so as well. It was slightly different with Real. And like I say, he'd had the two-year ban. I probably should say that ban was because he was abroad when the Hungarian Revolution happened in 1956, away with Honved, and refused to return afterwards, which was the same for many, many Hungarians who were lucky enough to be out of the country at that point. So he had a two-year ban from UEFA before he was allowed to play again. And so his career began again after that. And yes, the role was slightly different. So I don't know whether he redefined anything, particularly in terms of his position and role when it came to Real Madrid, other than to do it in a slightly less dynamic way, I suppose, in terms of the movement and the fluidity of it. And yet he was intelligent enough and skilled enough to be in the right positions at the right time to know exactly what to do. The technique hadn't changed at all. The skills were still there. And yes, I think in terms of prodigious goal scoring from someone who wasn't the centre forward. Now, like we talked earlier, of the very rigid formations and approach, the centre forward was your key source of goals. Now, that's not to say others didn't contribute. Of course they did. But not to the extent that Puskas did. That's still something of an anomaly, if I can say it properly, which I think just pushes him beyond. And to do it, I guess, alongside Di Stefano, who was also scoring at this incredible rate as the centre forward, it makes for quite an unstoppable team. But it was a very different Puskas at that stage.
In terms of sort of that sort of setback of that two-year ban, that's huge, isn't it? Sort of at the peak of your career. What was he, 28, 29, when that ban hit just before he goes to Real Madrid? What did he do during that period? Was it literally just I can't play, I can't train, I can't do anything to do with that? Or was it kind of a case of, you know, waiting for his opportunity and waiting for that ban to lift to get straight back to it?
Yeah, essentially. He came close to signing for a club in Greece in 1957. But then was prevented from doing so. I'm not sure fully why. He did find his way to Greece later in life as a manager of Panathinaikos, getting them to a European Cup final. But anyway, no, he wasn't able to. And he ultimately emigrated to Spain. And I think he played a game or two for Espanyol initially before ending up at Real Madrid. But no, I think largely he was unable to do much in terms of football during that time. And so his career was more or less come to a halt. And like you say, for that to come in fairly prime years is, well, it does make you wonder what else he would have achieved had things played out differently. You know, in the natural course of events, he would not have been allowed or able to transfer from Hungary to Spain, to Real Madrid or anywhere else. There were several other Hungarians there. There's Laszlo Kubala, famously at Barcelona. Coxis and Bosic also played abroad by this point. which would not have been possible had the revolution not happened and had they all been away at the time. And some people chose to go home, but others, several, opted not to, and he was one of them. But this was the price to pay for doing that. But, you know, I think bigger factors than football, it was seen as by many as the better option, this, to serve your ban and avoid having to go back to a bad regime at home.
It's quite an incredible thing to think that footballers were involved in that time. And I suppose it does show you what a different time it was politically for football players, and how we're so used to players moving around from country to country, from team to team, like it's kind of, you know, getting a new pair of football boots, when actually it was such a huge moment, probably for someone like Puskás in his career. After his playing career, obviously, he has a managerial career. Like you say, he has some success in Greece. Obviously, you'd probably say nowhere near the same legacy off the field as what he had on it, despite the fact that, you know, there's a goal competition run by FIFA in his honour every year. What is his legacy, do you think, that style of player that he had, the way that he played, that team that he was part of? How will Hungarian football and certainly Real Madrid remember someone like Puskás in terms of their history and their development and where they've gone in their football life?
Well, I think for Hungarian football, it's simply untouchable, I think, is probably the only way to look at it. Not just Puskás, but the whole of that team, but him principally, of course. I think it would be very, very difficult, if not impossible, for Hungary to ever match those levels again. The way football is globalized and ideas are copied and stolen and adapted so quickly, you wouldn't be able to develop something that the rest of the world didn't know about and therefore be able to surprise them in quite the way that Hungary did. That just wouldn't be feasible in modern times. And therefore, the achievements of those of that Hungarian generation, and Puskás in particular, will simply never be matched from a Hungarian perspective. I think they sit higher than anyone could ever reach in Hungarian football, and Puskás being the greatest of that. So he will, I think, forever remain the greatest Hungarian footballer and the most influential Hungarian footballer. And beyond that, though, I would say that probably in terms of world and European football, he is right up there as well. He's not one that you generally discuss in terms of the greatest players, but I think he's in the sort of next category where that conversation comes in, given his strike rate, given his achievements and given his feats. I think that would only be fair. I think where his legacy would be, would, again, it comes in part from the collective of how that team played. I think you can then see that football adapted from that point on. You know, England's eyes may have been opened belatedly. Others had started on this path as well. Ultimately, what the football that the Hungarians were doing then was taken and adapted and morphed and improved and became total football in the 70s. So I think you can see a lot of the roots of that style in what Hungary did. So I think there's a massive legacy from Puskás and his colleagues in terms of what football became. And then you could lead on from there into Johan Cruyff. And from there, you could lead into Barcelona and Guardiola and whatever else the path can be mapped out from there. And I think that is quite an influence to have. But equally, they were one step in it. Like I mentioned, they adapted what had gone before in that part of the world and made it more, but they did it on the bigger stage. And I think it became far more known and seen. And I guess those victories over England, notably the first one at Wembley, of course, and what he then did at Real Madrid, pushed him into the stratosphere, but pushed their style of play into the wider consciousness far more than had been possible or would have been possible otherwise. That they didn't win a World Cup is a real shame. I don't think there's any, in my mind, people can argue on this all they like, but in my mind, I don't think there's any failed World Cup team, or team that failed to win rather than a failed team, that probably deserved it as much as they did. Would have deserved the victory. That's my opinion. Other opinions are available, but I think this is the worst of the nearly men, if you like. It's the most hurtful. It's the one that really were the best team of the era without question. And that's the thing. The others are more debatable, I think, or it's closer. Here, they were the best without question, and they couldn't see it through, unfortunately. That would have been a great legacy for Eastern European football, for Hungarian football, but equally, the legacy really as Hungary's finest and best isn't changed by that. You know, that's still the case, and I think will remain so.
Sometimes that little bit of gold, that little bit of a trophy on the shelf, just adds that little finishing touch to it, doesn't it? Even though, obviously, as a player, he's hugely successful, it just kind of changes the conversation a little bit as well, doesn't it? I think for players like that. If you were you talked a little bit about, you know, leading to Total Football and Cruyff and Barcelona and Guardiola, a lot of, well, not a lot of, but some of those ideas that were kind of prevalent back then, especially when we see teams playing with a 3-2-5 or a 2-3-5 in their attacking build-up now. If you were to put Puskás into a football team today, maybe not at his slightly larger state as he got towards the end of his Real Madrid career, even though I'm sure he'd be pretty good on the ball, where would he fit into this kind of modern system that teams are starting to play now? I mean, personally, I think it would be, you know, he'd probably fit in any team, but where do you see him, or who's he comparable to, I suppose, in terms of position, if not ability?
Well, yes. I mean, I guess people are playing, he would have to be the sort of left-sided of a forward three or something like that, perhaps, and cutting in from the side. In my world, you could think of Anthony Gordon and people like that. However, pace and speed of play is obviously something that wasn't such a key part of Puskás's game, and that element of players like Gordon and others, Foden, I guess, would be another example in terms of the skill and the ability to drop into the middle and influence the play deeply, score frequently. That, I guess, is probably the style. Maybe Foden's the better example, but that's the kind of style I think he would be. However, I think, you know, we're talking 70 years since Puskás's prime. I think the speed of play has changed somewhat. But I think, you know, if you could transpose him into the modern day and give him a modern diet and training to be that left-sided forward, cutting in, swapping with the centre forwards and running amok, scoring at will, I think that's where he could be.
Give him a pair of Adidas Predators and one of these flyaway Premier League footballs and I'm sure he'd have 900 career goals. Considering exactly. The equipment they had to play with then. Aidan, that was a great chat, a great player to talk about. You know, there's so many moments we could probably go on about and look at, whether it was European Cups or anything through that time. Have you got sort of a lasting memory of Puskás or a goal or a moment that you think actually sort of completely summarises him as a player?
Yeah, I think there's two, and I think they're very, very similar. And it would be the drag back goals that he scored in the 1953 game against England and in the 1960 European Cup final for Real Madrid. I think they're both really quite similar on the sort of inside the penalty area across to one side of the goal, drag back, and then an incredibly powerful left-footed shot into the goal. I think that is the goals that stick to my mind when I think of Puskás. And, you know, that kind of skill level would be just as useful today.
Definitely. And as we've said with many of these podcast episodes, after you've listened to this, now you've finished, now you are allowed to go on YouTube and spend hours and hours watching goals, games, documentaries, and everything you need to know about someone like Puskás. Thanks, Aidan. A great chat. Thank you to everybody who's listened as well. Do continue to follow the series as we go through even more icons on this journey with these football times. Thanks, everyone.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.